Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Talk Openly. I am so grateful to be here with my excellent friend, Daniel. Daniel, hello.
Good to see you, Jack, as always. Thanks for being here, buddy.
So good to see you. Yes, man, how much I need friends. It's awesome to be with you.
Yeah, same. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna be talking about a kind of trendy topic within like kind of positive psychology fields. You might have even seen it on like Instagram or Facebook, compassion fatigue. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that is from like the secular standpoint that it came from. And then we're also going to explore it from a more kind of Dharma sacred perspective. So I think it's going to be a fun conversation tonight.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know that within your career field that this has got to be a trendy topic, right? Like
Yes, yes.
when I imagine any type of work, the kind of work with that you do, I just imagine it's got to be so draining at times.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. Yeah, burnout is a hot topic. So yeah, we're gonna dig into it a little bit, but I'd love to hear how things are going for you. What's new? What's the same? What's your training like?
Well, before we get into that, I just wanted to give a shout out to Lung Talk. Connor's here in the cottage with me. He's studying, and so it's nice. He can't see you, but he's over there on the couch.
Hi,
And
Connor.
there you go. Big shout out to Connor.
Yeah,
But yeah, things are good, actually. It was just a little bit a little while ago, I was out walking the dogs. I thought it was like perfect timing because it's raining here. It's been raining on and off. And I
nice.
got outside and I was like, all right, this is perfect. Got to get the dogs out. And we made it about 2 blocks when all of a sudden thunder, lightning, and just an outrageous downpour. I mean, it was just, it went from nothing to buckets of water falling on my head.
Everything.
It was amazing. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah, very refreshing. But besides the weather, things are pretty good, actually. I was just thinking earlier how surprised I was. I've been getting up early for quite a while now, and whatever, doing my practices and hitting the gym and stuff, and like really, really, really early, like hours before the sun comes up.
Yeah.
And it has been kind of tiring at times, you know, where I'm like, oh, like almost loopy from
Yep.
lack of sleep or too little sleep or just sleep disruption or whatever. And I thought the same might be true tonight, but there's no signs of it. I feel like clear-headed and very present and energized. Maybe it was the storm. It was
I
the
love when
maybe
it
it was the
works in that
negative
direction.
ions from the storm.
Ah, maybe. Well, I mean, that's a great theory. I have to say that living up in Seattle, where it's stormy quite often, I don't know if the ion theory works checks out.
Too much of a good thing up there.
Maybe. That's funny.
Yeah, no,
Yeah,
that.
there is something to waking up very early to get that co contemplative practice in, that's very sacred.
Yeah, well, you know, I a couple of darshans ago, I was talking to Lama, and it was interesting because I was talking to him about practice and asking him about support for the practice and sort of like essentially, you know, how do we get energized around, you know, just in general, actually. And one of the things that he told me that I think might be a part of it, he was like, the practice itself is energizing, right? It is
Yeah.
supportive, and so. You know, both the tantric practices and the meditative practices that they are support and forms of well, I don't know the right I don't know exactly how he said it, but essentially, you know, that we get support from there and therefore somewhat energized. So
Yeah.
maybe that's a little bit of what's going on because I think, you know, cons I've been my practice has been nice and steady, consistent for at least a while now. It feels good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I do. I think that consistency does have a big effect. And Yeah, I've noticed for myself too, like for a while, and I know I've talked about it on the show, I would have almost like a kind of a yo-yo diet kind of approach to my meditation in terms of when I would wake up and when I would do it during the day. And so I used to be really like hard about like, no, I'm gonna get up at like 4:30 and do like an hour and a half long practice, and
Yeah.
it's really intense. And I burned out on that. And so then I kind of swung the other direction of like, well, I'm just gonna do it when I do it. And you know, I am gonna do it every day, no
Yeah.
matter what. But that didn't work out because there was kind of this feeling that I wasn't I would just get scatterbrained, you know, and it felt like maybe the intention wasn't there in the same way. And so now I've shifted into that. I definitely do wake up in time to do about like an 50-minute kind of session where you know, I do prayers and some reading and shamatha. But it's a little bit more like it's stable now. It's like I know that I'm gonna do that. And but yeah, I think that consistency really like gives us that just yeah, that stability throughout the day. Otherwise, yeah, I'm just kind of a mess.
Well, it's interesting that how the consistency aspect of meditation practice, how it sort of gets this habit pattern or this energy, this momentum going,
Yeah.
which is really, really helpful. But it also is, it's interesting to me how in some cases, you know, if I'm not consistent, then it's harder to sort of have a lot of like enthusiasm before I sit, right? There's then I meet there's greater resistance, you
Yes.
know, and so then when I am consistent, and maybe that is just this sort of momentum that builds up, that it's less likely, like even if a little bit of mild resistance shows up, it just gets kind of blown away.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's like it's this is just what I do. You know,
Yeah,
it's
right, exactly.
right.
And you'll feel sort of out, you'll feel sort of weird, right? If you don't do it, you'll feel like, whoa, something's missing.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting that we're talking about this today because I'm kind of experimenting a little bit with my trainings, because I've noticed with like the extremely short days that we have up here, where there's really like I only get a couple hours of like genuine light in the sky, because otherwise I'm like in the office or something. And it's just so dark. Like I leave the house and it's pitch black. I come back and it's pitch black. And so I've just been extremely fatigued. And so I just started it today. In the mornings, I'm gonna try doing my tantric practice. So something that's like kind of more energizing and activating, where I have to use my imagination and really like get into almost this like story, right? There's like a little bit of this narrative that's happening in Tantra. And so I'm gonna just see like if I try something that's kind of activating in the morning, is my mind gonna like be able to respond better? And then do my shamatha sit in the evening when, because I've noticed in the like recently, my mind in the evening is just a little bit more like kind of just ready to be still. Whereas in the morning, I'm still dreaming. I'm like, oh, like I'm
Yeah.
just I'm all over the place. And so I'm going to try that out and see how it goes for a couple days. But mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, mix it up, experiment a little bit, and report back.
I will. Yeah, definitely.
Good. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like things are moving right along.
Moving along. Yep. Yeah, work is busy as ever. And I like it. Yeah.
Good.
People are good.
Yeah. Nice. Excellent. Well,
Yeah.
hopefully, yeah. I'm glad that we don't have any sort of like major news to report, you know, something about like major depressive episodes or anxiety or, you know what I mean? Like sometimes, like, it's good to just have these sort of like, yeah, things are all right. You know, they're good. They're, yeah, it's
Fine.
fine.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, one thing I do want to ask is, I know you're not much of a holiday person, so I'm curious your feeling at this time of year and how that's affecting your practice and whatnot.
How much time do we have
How
here?
much time do we
Let's
have?
see. No, it's all right. I'm learning to make my peace with it. It's less actually challenging than it was in the past. I still feel the sort of like I just wanted to be over. That's all.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part, right? Is when the whole everything's over and we can kind of start to go back to some sense of normality, whatever that means, right? Like that's what I'm really looking forward to. But at the same time, it's less troublesome than it's been in the past because I'm just generally a bit more relaxed around all of it, including, one of the things that the main thing I think that I really dislike are all of the expectations, right? And how they get created and maintained and pushed on people or whatever, right? And I really, really don't like that. But what I've been trying to focus a bit more on this season is how even if people are a little bit misguided or under the influence of marketers or whatever the case might be, that actually deep down inside, what's behind all of that is a desire for their own happiness and for that of others, right? And so, walking around seeing the Christmas lights and stuff, there was a time where I sort of was like not so silently judging people for, oh man, I'm such a bah humbug, totally. I was out for a walk just the other night and I saw this guy who was putting up Christmas lights and I stopped it. I was just talking to him and just I thanked him for putting it up because it put a little light into my life, right? It made me a little happier. And I was like, that's nice. All these people putting up decorations just for my pleasure. Yeah. How
I
kind of them.
know that is such a nice way to think about it. It's like, oh yeah, we're all just trying to like find some light and happiness at
Yeah.
the end of the year. It's dark, it's cold, we just want to have a little joy,
And I think that that's actually the other part of it beyond the expectations is that I recognize that there are a lot of people at this time of year where like this their pain, their suffering, their sort of inner turmoil, their hurt feelings, their sadness, depression, all that just escalates, right? It gets way out of hand this time of year. Not just because of like the change in seasons and stuff, but around, grief and loss and all kinds of things, right? And so, and I feel like there's this part of me where I'm like, don't you people see, right? There's people hurting right now, right? Because of this. But that's not good. So I should just try to keep a balanced view on it. I don't have a balanced view. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get a balanced view on it.
Totally. Yeah, I think my stickiness has always been around what you're saying, like the consumerism. But also sometimes I feel like this whole month just gets hijacked by, this this kind of it's a religious based holiday, and I have religious trauma with Christianity and whatnot. That I really used to feel just so militantly annoyed by. I just wanted to actively push it all away and just wear black and just be like, fuck all you, you know? But I don't feel that way anymore. And I do really feel like it's my Dharma practice. And yeah, exactly the same things that you're bringing up, where it's all of us just want to be happy. Okay. And
Right.
if it's this tradition that's kind of forced on us, we have to go through it for a whole month. But if I can just kind of see, what are we really trying to do? We're trying to connect with one another.
Right.
Some of us are even, trying to be generous in our gift
Yeah.
giving or, donations and whatnot. And really, what is wrong with that? Yes, I think predatory capitalism, and and manipulative marketing and all the things are bad. They're destructive for our environment, all the things, right? But at the heart of what the humans involved in this are doing. I'm really trying to just see, like, okay, that part of it is good. I like that.
That's right. I borrow a phrase here from my kids, which is we don't want to yuck anyone's yum.
Yeah, I like that one. You heard that from your kids?
Yeah, they're like, well, they're talking about food, right? Like, if someone's enjoying something, don't yuck their yum.
You know what's so funny is that the first time I heard that was from the kink community.
Oh. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just funny. I wonder what kind of cool teachers are in your kids' schools and borrowing from.
Right, exactly. Well, I guess in a similar way, no kink shaming, right? Like,
Totally, yeah.
if people are into Christmas and holidays and Chris, all of that, that's fine, right?
Yeah.
It's not my role to try to shame people into changing their behavior. It,
Totally.
unless it worked, but I, so far it has never worked, so I've given up on it.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. I look back sometimes at the way that I used to just deride people in my, usually just in my mind, right? Like I wouldn't actually verbally attack people. Although I think sometimes I was very like ironic and kind of caustic with people about like holidays and whatnot.
But what about to a receptive audience? What about to somebody that,
Oh, do oh, for sure. Well, misery loves company, right? Like, oh my gosh, yeah.
Right.
There would be nothing better than getting together on Christmas and like getting drunk and talking crap about people who
Yeah, exactly.
how things have changed. Nice. Well, I'm glad that you're surviving and finding ways to appreciate and understand the holidays differently.
Absolutely. The last thing, and then I'll shut up. I know that we could probably talk the whole show about this, but the other, I think kind of mixed into the expectations thing is this. Actually, deep down inside of me, one of the things that makes me so frustrated is that I actually would love, to some extent, I totally would enjoy leaning in 100% and like doing all the things, right? Getting presents, like wealth, like way in advance. Like shopping for everybody I know and love and think about and having like a stockpile of Christmas presents and cards with meaningful wishes and all of that for everybody, right? And putting up lights and decoration, the whole thing. But man, like I just don't have it in me. I don't have the resources, the time, the energy, the
It's a
anything to
lot.
do any of that stuff. So I always procrastinate. Right. And I drag my feet and I bemoan the state of affairs, right? And like it shouldn't be this way, it shouldn't be this way. And then like, with a week and a half to go or something, I'm just like, oh crap. Okay, I guess I better do something for at least a handful of people. Otherwise, I'm gonna be in big doo-doo.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I imagine certainly your kids would be like,
Right.
just like raise hell.
Well, they would do the classic. They would just do, like it would be the sad, quiet disappointment where
And
they,
that's the worst.
exactly.
Yeah,
So anyway, I
that's
don't want to
way worse.
disappoint anyone. I'm sure I will, but
Yeah.
try to be a little balanced about it.
Any gifts you're getting people this year, getting your kids?
None of them particularly interesting, except the thing that stood out to me. I hope they're not listening. They're not listening. Who am I kidding? Maybe one day in the future, right? At some point, maybe they'll listen. But no, the okay. So these are like little like stocking stuffer type things, but they're freeze dried candies. Have you ever?
Weird.
So like freeze dried Skittles, for example,
Whoa.
right?
Sounds weird.
It's weird. It's weird, but it's all the rage on TikTok or whatever. And
Nice.
so
All these
I got,
Gen Zers.
yeah, I got a couple of bags. And the hard part is that my curiosity is getting the best of me. It's like sitting there. I'm like, well, kind of curious, but I can't
Gotta
open it
crack
yet. So I
one.
can't do that. I gotta wait.
No.
I bet it's not gonna be quite as amazing as it, as like my curiosity sort of like it thinks it might be, right? It's
It
probably just
never
gonna.
is.
Nah, it's
even if
good.
it was fantastic,
Right.
it would go away and then you'd never really think about it again.
Right, and no matter how much you dry it, you still have that high fructose corn syrup and all the artificial colors and flavors and
Yeah.
everything. It's
Yellow
just
number
concentrated.
five.
Oh,
Yeah.
yellow number five is the best.
It's so tasty. Well, Daniel, let's get to
Yeah.
the real stuff. Let's check
Yeah,
out.
let's get to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, let's get some Lojong going. What do you
I think
think?
that's a good transition, right?
Oh,
Jump on to the RLSG, random Lojong slogan generator on the Lions Roar Dharma Center.org website.
Which we have recently discovered is in fact the only random Lojong slogan generator in this part of the universe.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
We have not found another RLSG anywhere.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. This
All
is special. So, as
right,
always, thank you, Dirk.
yes.
So, I'm going to push the big button and see what happens.
All right.
Ooh, a
Ooh.
new one. This is exciting.
One. Number 35, don't aim to win. So what does that mean? Choyam Trungpa in Training the Mind and Cultivating Loving Kindness says, when practitioners begin to develop their understanding of the Dharma and their appreciation of the Dharma, they sometimes fall into a sort of racehorse approach. They become involved with who is the fastest, who can understand the highest meaning of Mahamudra or the greatest meaning of Tantra or the highest idea of ultimate bodhicitta, or who has understood any of the hidden teachings. Such practitioners are concerned with who can do their prostrations faster, who can sit better, who can eat better, who can do this and that better. They are always trying to race with other people. But if our practice is regarded purely as a race, we have a problem.
Yeah,
All
do you ever,
right.
Jack, does this, has this ever, or does this ever show up in your life?
Oh, never. Never at all.
You're being sarcastic.
I'm being sarcastic indeed. In fact, I have quite a lot of experience in wanting to push myself because I am an overachiever, and that also leads into my Dharma training. And it can get kind of punitive, as we've talked about before.
Yeah.
This kind of like, I gotta be the best that I can be in my training. As though I'm like training for a marathon. There's ways that it's similar. You have to be disciplined, but it's not about like achieving a reward. Like we're not, it's just so such a different approach, that mindset of wanting to win, versus wanting to develop our minds. So yeah, this one super applies to me. How about you?
There is no attainment nor any non-attainment, right? Like, so,
Art Sutra.
you know, it's weird. Like, so I don't know, other than maybe in the beginning, that I had a lot of like where it really kind of like motivated me to like in comparison to somebody else. It does still show up though that I have this sort of like sneaking suspicion that in fact, probably somebody, you know, and this will happen. I'll be thinking about Connor and how hard he met, you know, studies, and he's always like reading and thinking about this stuff, right? Has all kinds of practice and or practical experience in this. And I'm like, ah, oh, now if anybody knows the highest meaning of Mahamudra, right? Or that kind of thing, where I'm like, yeah, I do actually, I kind of pro not project, yeah, project my own ideas onto other practitioners sometimes. You know,
Yeah.
and I'm like, oh, they've been doing this for so long, or they seem so knowledgeable, or they seem so accomplished, or whatever. And there is this sort of feeling of like, wow, I'm never going to get to that point. Sort of like when I go to the gym and I see these people that are like super buff, right? And like,
Yeah.
and I'm like, man, I'm not, oh, and I kind of put myself down about, I'm like, I'm never going to be like that, right? Like, it's
Wow.
there's that sort of thing that shows up. But it's not like this super strong, like I have to, like I gotta win, I gotta do the longest sitting, or I have to, you know, there's no competition as far as I can see, other than there is this comparison aspect that happens.
For sure. Yeah, and I think I do think that at the beginning that was like a little bit motivating for me, right? Where I'm like, I came to the temple and I met these people who were like so brilliant, you know, like just and at ease and, you know, exuding kind of confidence and like just like good natured energy. And it was like, oh my God, I don't have that. Like that, you know, that was kind of like this initial thing of like, I really want that. And so I think at the beginning, like, oh, not the idea of wanting to win or compete with someone, but that kind of like desiring those positive qualities can be really like inspiring. It can be motivating.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that it can kind of tip over as we're like developing our training and whatnot. Yeah, that comparison game totally happens for me as well. Yeah, I've been aware of that kind of competitive streak within me for a long time. Sometimes it's a little bit embarrassing, to be honest, and I really have to watch it.
Well, do you what can I let me ask you something else about this. Do you if there was something to be won, if there was like an a finish line, right? A finish line, what would it be? Is it Nirvana?
I guess,
Buddhahood?
yeah, like in enlightenment. And but that's the thing is that like yeah, there's nothing within, like as you like start to, you know, actually seep like your life in these teachings, it totally reduces any desire to win anything, you know, like of course we're like aiming to achieve enlightenment, but like it just totally structurally, it totally changes our approach. Yeah.
Exactly that. Like there's this sort of there's an overwhelming aspect to Dharma, at least in my from my perspective, where the more I learn, the more that I realize like I don't know anything. I can't even begin to fathom, right? And as soon as I begin to get some kind of sense of like, oh yeah, I know what this means, right? Like I'll get like a basic like kind of a fifth grader sort of intellectual understanding of a concept or something, and I'll be like, that's it, I got it, I know, right? And then a little bit later, something it sinks down a little bit lower, and it becomes a closer to something that's realized, right? And I'm like, oh, whoa, what I thought is not at all what this is like, right? And there's this realization that it's going to just keep changing my perspective, my view, my pr it's going to keep shifting, right? Which is natural along the path that it's not going to look the same, but it does feel overwhelming at times, you know, this sense that like if you did think there was an end, like you thought there was a peak on the mountain and you had to reach that peak and that was the goal, then I think it feels like really overwhelming. If you think of it more like just a journey, a lifelong journey, it becomes a little bit less
Yeah, we don't need to compete with anyone or ourselves.
Thank
Yeah, we
goodness.
just
Thank
gotta
goodness.
learn.
I'm not very good at it.
Yeah. Well, let's check out this picture. I always love the artwork.
Well, wait, can I finish? I want to say one more
Yeah,
thing.
please.
So a long time ago, in college, I think it was, when I was being taught the difference between Theravada and Mahayana Buddhism, I remember thinking, oh, Mahayana, the big path, the inclusive path, you know, that's not for me. 'Cause, you know, that's like team sport. That's like team sports or something, you know, like everybody all together, you know, moving forward. Like, not for me. I think that the Theravadan approach, I back then I was like, that's right. Like just me by myself, you know, doing like then my that was my rough understanding way back when. And I thought for sure, right, like the solitary realization that that was my thing.
That is the ultimate, that you don't actually need anyone, you know, to for support, that you should be able to do it all on your own.
All by myself, I'm gonna do it. Well, I was wrong,
Well,
thankfully.
yeah, thankfully. Okay, Tsongkhapa, Lama Tsongkhapa. I love this kind of gold leaf painting we see here. And also something about that mudra, right? And I don't know if I can do it. But I love the different mudras that we see in the tankas. There's something very just like kind of sensual and I don't know, just gravitating about that, where it's almost like this kind of dance, right? That we see the Buddhas and the figures, just this kind of delicate, lovely hand posture. I don't know what about it. I feel like kind of drawn to that.
That's what I was going to say. I find them intriguing. You
Yeah.
know, like it makes you, it pulls you in.
It does.
Like I literally was like, and it's not just the screen size, I was like really kind of coming in close to the screen, like,
Right.
what exactly
Right.
does that look like? And what does it mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes our teachers, like Lama, sometimes will just kind of like while he's talking, I just see almost like he'll pull up like a mudra. And I've noticed that with Thich Nhat Hanh in some of his lectures, he'll just kind of hold up, a hand and kind of just gently move through these mudras. And it's just so lovely. It kind of feels like there's almost this magician quality where they're like,
Right, right.
sending things to us. Yeah, very cool.
Maybe at
Yeah.
some point we can cover mudras. I don't, like
Oh,
we
yeah.
did. Maybe next time, Geshe Sewang's here. You know, like he taught us quite a lot about mantras when he was here last time.
That's
It'd be
right.
fun to ask him or another one of the Geshe's that visits. We could have him on the show if they could talk a little bit about mudras.
I'd love to hear that. That'd be awesome.
Cool.
Nice. All right. Well, until next time, Lojong slogan generator.
We'll be back.
We'll be back. Well, Daniel, so tonight we're talking about compassion fatigue. It's kind of this term I've heard bounced around a lot li lately in the last couple years. I think sometimes it's thrown in there with burnout. And yeah, it's certainly circulating a lot in my field of people who work in mental health, but also like medical care and first responders. And yeah, I'm really glad that it's something that's being talked about because I think the more we talk about and normalize things like this that in various ways relate to our mental health and how we respond to difficulties, I think the better. But we're gonna kind of like go through it a little bit and like unpack some of the stuff that maybe the Dharma term for compassion is not quite the right word for this phrase here. So we're gonna get into it a
Yeah.
little bit. I'm looking
I
forward to
like it. I like it. Could you how would you define compassion fatigue?
So what I've been kind of taught, and what I've read about is that compassion fatigue is when we've over time continually been put in situations with people that we're giving care to, that we're caring for, whether it's doing that for our job or doing that for a loved one that we're taking care of, that we just start to feel extremely exhausted. We're putting out a lot of effort and energy into caring for people who sometimes might not be able to give us any feedback about that care, who might not be able to express appreciation, who might die, and who we might have to send off into the world and never see again, and just kind of be left to wonder what happened to them. So it's these situations where our hard work goes kind of under or unappreciated.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what happens is that people start to experience symptoms similar to PTSD. So a lot
Like
of
what?
like irritability, kind of lashing out at loved ones, at coworkers, a kind of sense of worthlessness and like hopelessness in what you're doing. Like, oh my gosh, I'm just like this one person, how can I
Yeah.
possibly like take on like all of this, that keeps coming at us? Like, I think a lot, this really got big during COVID, Because I mean, man, hospitals were just so overwhelmed. You know, we didn't know what this was. People were just exhausted and scared and doing the best that they could with very little resources. And so, yeah, it's just these situations where, because people were put under so much stress, there was a lot of like ending up where people needed to almost isolate from other
Yeah.
people within, you know, already the isolation of COVID. And I think a lot of despair and kind of just almost feeling nothing. Like you're just kind of like, I don't know, what do you want me to do? Like, you know, that kind
Yeah.
of feeling of like, there's just like, there's nothing I can do. There's too much suffering. How can I possibly even give a shit when there's just too much going on? It's too exhausting. So that's kind of like where it originates.
So when we started the show, I sort of alluded to the fact that in your career, you likely have a decent amount of experience with this. I was hoping maybe you could just like very briefly state like what it is that you do for work and also what experiences you've had with compassion fatigue or what's being called compassion fatigue.
Sure. Yeah. So I work at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, and it's the only trauma level trauma one hospital within the area. So there's four states that we actually take all level one trauma patients. So if you're someone who gets in a horrific car accident in Montana, you're getting airlifted to Seattle.
No joke.
No shit.
Wow.
Like if
Okay.
it's a type of accident where you're going to need a lot of medical care, surgeries and whatnot,
Yep.
that's where
Yep.
you're going.
Okay.
And I work in the psych department. So I work with people who are experiencing psychiatric crisis. Maybe they've had a suicide attempt or are thinking about suicide, or they're having a psychotic episode. And so, yeah, and I work with a lot of with nurses and doctors, people who are also experiencing a lot of stress. And so, yeah, I've noticed it particularly when I come home. So this kind of fatigue and what I think we're going to get to is that, you know, maybe the better word for it is empathy fatigue. So I'll notice that sometimes I'll like come back from work and I'll have had a day where like I'm facilitating groups with people who are psychotic and like have just tried to kill themselves and, you know, have talked to people one-on-one, have, you know, had to take orders from doctors and nurses and all the things. And I get home and my roommates and I are having dinner and my roommates are sharing about their day and how like, oh man, the cashier at the grocery store was really annoying to me. And like, I just feel really shitty about it. And I'm just like, okay, you think that's bad? Like you think that that's a problem? Like I'll just notice, like I'll feel like this shutting down within like my body
Yeah.
and within my, like I can feel empathy just like drain from me where I'm like, I've just spent all day like pouring energy like into people and receiving their energy and like, you're going to tell me that that was a big deal. Like, no, it wasn't. And then like I feel like I know that there's like an element of superiority there too that I think is like a real aspect of at least for me where like burnout comes in is because I'm kind of just thinking about myself and like, you know, I am doing all this hard work and people aren't noticing, you know, and like, and other people's shit isn't as big of a deal, you know, like there's this real kind of self-centeredness and
Yeah.
superiority there that happens. So that's been really interesting to kind of track.
Yeah. So you see it in yourself, you know, like you were saying when you come home, and then you probably also see it, like you were talking about working with other professionals in the same field, you probably see these symptoms of burnout in your coworkers or just the professionals that you work with as well, right? And that aspect of, that was one thing that I thought was kind of interesting in preparing for this discussion was the idea that compassion fatigue and burnout, while similar, they can be both, that burnout oftentimes is not really, it doesn't have to be directly related to working with other people who are suffering, right? That's the thing that sort of makes compassion fatigue what it is that, anybody can get burnt out because of the institutions that they work at or whatever, just their workload is too heavy. But that this particular thing that we're talking about is directly related to having to regularly work with people who are going through a lot of, experiencing a lot of pain and suffering a lot.
And it happens a lot with caregivers. That's a pretty common thing, is that people who have to take care of like maybe a parent who has dementia, like these are extremely hard situations. And it can feel just like almost like torturous. Like I don't even know like when this is gonna end, when I'm gonna get a break. Where and so it's almost like the mind is just saying like, well, then I just need to shut down because I can't, like I can't see an end in sight, so I'm just gonna shut down that part that is like able to give.
Probably all of the like coping mechanisms that we've talked about in the past probably come into play as well, right? All of the different ways that people try to deal with situations where they're overwhelmed and don't have control anymore, right? Like I can imagine, unhealthy relationships with drugs and alcohol and food and sex and all of that stuff showing up as a result of this. So it's in that sense, it's really not it's not helpful, right? Like I think that that's one of the sort of things that we want to get at is that this idea, like if we're getting to the point where we're not able to be helpful, whether it's professional or otherwise, right? Then like something has to shift, right? Because we have to be, it's sort of like that whole, the whole idea of the mask in the airplane, right? You got to take care of yourself before you can take care of the others. And I think there's some sense of understanding and setting boundaries as well, right? Both
That's
personally
huge.
and like both in the people that you're working with and within yourself, some sense of like when the resonance is too high, that empathic resonance is maybe getting like it's getting blown up somehow. We're getting like attached to it, or we're getting somehow identified with it.
Yeah, and I think too, it's like I can get really stuck sometimes when like if I'm thinking about what I wish I could be doing instead of like whatever it is, being at work or talking to roommates, like I'll be thinking, I just want to be by myself. I want to be like alone, or like I want to watch TV or something where I'm like really fixated on that thing. Like, that's kind of a sign that, like, okay, it's coming from a self-centered place rather than like an empathetic place. So that's kind of a sign of my burnout as well. It's like if I'm thinking about all the mundane things that don't actually really matter or give me much happiness, that's usually a sign that I'm feeling pretty burnt.
Well, you have to be mindful enough to see the signs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
So,
that's part of skillful means, like you were saying.
exactly. So, I'm going to read to you a quote by Barry Kurzon, who is an MD, professor of psychiatry and a Buddhist monk.
That's so cool.
Okay, so he says, I hear prominent people talking about compassion fatigue. It's a misnomer. There's no such thing as compassion fatigue, just empathy fatigue. So, and you already, alluded to this, but what then is, what are we talking about? Like, what's the difference then between being, like a lot of people are like, oh, they're very empathic or they identify as empaths, right? And oftentimes they are overwhelmed by other people's pain and suffering, right? And I think suffer from this thing that is being referred to as compassion fatigue. But what do you see as sort of the difference between compassion and empathy?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, what is the difference between compassion and empathy? Well, I think sometimes what happens with people who are very empathetic but don't have like a clear sense of boundaries or skillful means, or maybe like what, Lama teaches us, which is that we give 49% and save 51 for ourselves, right? So it's like people who are going to get tipped over
Yeah.
by others. And yeah, it's really interesting because Tenzin Choki, who she was here last year, maybe it's been here more recently than that, but she did a workshop on cultivating compassion. And in that workshop, she said that compassion fatigue is like is actually not possible.
Right.
So like especially as a Buddha, but even before becoming a Buddha, as we're on the path and developing compassion, genuine compassion is actually resourcing. She used that
That's
term,
right.
resourcing. So
Yeah.
it, in fact, it gives back to us. It's not resource depleting. So I think that is one of the great boons of spiritual practice, is that we might be someone who like really cares and wants to help people, but if we don't have an understanding of like what genuine compassion is and how to, how to really come from a place of genuine compassion and know our boundaries, then we're not going to be able to do this kind of work. We're just going to be overwhelmed
Right.
and ill, really. And so yeah, I found that fascinating that like actually, the difference is that compassion will never burn out. Compassion will always, always give back to us when we're, in and giving it to others. Yeah.
Well, so compassion and wisdom, right? Two sides of the, they're two polarities, right? Part of the
Yeah.
same sort of thing, right? Like real or true compassion being an expression of wisdom. And so I think it's kind of interesting that, like, after our series on the paramitas,
Yeah.
right? Where did it end? It ends with wisdom, right? Like, that's the last one. And
Yeah.
then here we are talking about compassion, which is what we're talking about is that it's the compassion that comes from that wisdom, right?
Yeah.
And that would be what kind of wisdom are we talking about? Well, be sort of seeing impermanence and interdependence, right? And like hopefully not just intellectually getting it, but having greater and greater realization of what that means. But that as a result of that, between that and our bodhicitta, right? Like that should lead to this compassion that you're talking about that doesn't result in burnout. And I think it's interesting that so Chögyam Trungpa, he had this term that he talked about, which was the difference between wise compassion and idiot compassion. And I th idiot compassion is kind of a harsh way of talking about it. And I don't, it's not directly related. I'm not saying that compassion fatigue is the result of idiot compassion, but maybe there's some Maybe there's
There's
a
something in there.
correlation there, right? Like, I
Yeah,
haven't thought
totally.
about it enough, but there's a sense that it's a sense that wise compassion is just that. It's sort of like it sees the big picture, sees all of it, and there's this motivation to release suffering, right?
Yeah.
And it's inherently skillful in what in how it manifests. And
Yeah.
there, the idiot compassion is the exact opposite of that, right? And it involves, as we oftentimes see, there's this sort of sense of doing it for ourselves,
Yeah.
right? What does that mean? How is it that we're going to be idiot? Or actually, think about it this too. The other word for it besides idiot compassion is blind compassion. And remember when we were talking about wisdom, how it's the eye, it's the seeing part of all of this, right?
Yeah.
That the other paramitas are blind, and that wisdom is the seeing aspect of it. The
Yeah.
blind compassion is the compassion without the wisdom to see. And
Yeah. Yeah.
therefore, You know, so what is it that motivates that kind of idiot or blind compassion? It's this desire to like feel good for helping. Like I want to feel good by
Right.
being a good person. I want to be
Eight
seen as
worldly
a com
concerns,
Yeah.
right?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Eight worldly
Yes.
concerns that actually it's not genuine compassion
Right.
when we're doing it out of wanting to feel good and to like improve our, image.
That's right.
Because a lot of times there's especially, in the medical field, there's a lot of like wanting to get ahead and
Yeah.
make a name for yourself, and so helping people ends up being a way towards self-gain. And I'm not saying everybody, but that's certainly part of the field. And so yeah, that's so interesting that it's what our teachers are really encouraging is this skillful, compassionate detachment, right? And that word is, it's a little prickly with me sometimes, but there's this way that we need to detach from what's not actually important. So those eight worldly concerns, those things that, typically that's where we're coming from, that we need to detach from that in order to be truly compassionate. And also detach from what we can't change in others. So like so much of helping in the helping profession that gets people burnt out is that we're trying to change people when a lot of times they just have to do what they're gonna do. Like we can't, Buddhists can't change people's karma.
Right.
Not even a Buddha. A fully enlightened Buddha can change someone's karma. We can only teach, only in quotes, right? Because that's incredible that we can teach. And so that is a wise compassion. It's knowing what's actually possible and then really doing it, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and then that's and in that sense, now you use the word detachment. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that, but there's also just this notion of discernment, right? That comes along with it. I think that, in some cases when we want to be seen as nice people, when we want to be seen as compassionate, caring people, that in some cases, it's we're lacking discernment, right? Like we end up getting sort of walked all over. That's where we begin to blur boundaries, and we begin to begin or always engage in this sort of this lack of skillful behavior. So I don't know if have you ever heard of Ken Wilber?
Yeah, I know his
Okay,
name.
so it's been I was on a Ken Wilber kick. I don't know, like 20 years ago. I really enjoyed what he had to say. I think. Whatever, I moved on past it, but he had this quote related to this that I'm going to read, which I thought was relevant. He says, "Real compassion includes wisdom, and so it makes judgments of care and concern. It says some things are good and some things are bad, and I will choose to act only on those things that are informed by wisdom and care." Meaning, like there is this. I mean, there's a time. We hear this all the time that real compassion sometimes is a slap upside the head, right? It's not always saying what people want to hear, right? It's not. It doesn't look a particular way. It's not formulaic in any way, shape, or form, right? It's informed by what's right then, right there, right? This desire to we as clearly as we can possibly see it, given whatever, right? Like we see it as clearly as we can. We have this desire to end the suffering, and then we act on that, right? And that's as skillful as we can be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's coming from a place of the truth, and really, yeah, just really trying to resonate with that rather than creating these pitfalls for ourselves of just trying to change what we can't.
Totally. One of the things that I loved in just sort of thinking about this ahead of time was so I read or think a lot about what Chögyam Trungpa said. I enjoy his teachings a lot. And one of the things that he brings up when talking about compassion, about real compassion, is that it has this radiant quality, right? It's like the sun, right? In the sense that it can't help but eliminate darkness just by its radiant quality.
It just does, yeah.
Right, exactly. And that there's not this sort of like focus on self-consciousness, right? But rather there's this, what he calls, he says that we should be engaged in open and generous communication with the environment. Right. And I really like that notion, right? Like, yeah, there are people, there are all kinds of beings in our environment, right? And we totally want to have this like centerless loving kindness that just like radiates out to all beings, right? Not just like the people that we're employed to care for, right? Or that we have to take care of, but just generally, like all, not just beings necessarily, right? It's just this radiant quality of like wanting to see clearly, wanting to make sure that things are good and that suffering is reduced as much as possible. So
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought there was something quite beautiful about that, because that really got like where I'm like, yeah, maybe there's times where the light gets darkened, right? Because something covers it, or you know, there's something to like something clouds or something that gets in the way. But for the most part, like you could just, it can just keep on radiating. And then like,
Right.
anyway,
Yeah, no, that
enjoy the
is
poetry around it.
right. That is really life-giving, right? Because I think that is definitely where a lot of burnout comes, is when, you know, all of that light might seem covered, right? And there's all this bad shit happening and there's stress. It can feel like you know, kind of what's the point? But really, like what I, you know, one of the kind of just so such a saving thing for me that, you know, I've become so grateful for in my Dharma practice is just really coming to some understanding. I won't at all say realization, but some understanding that genuinely everyone, every single sentient being has that light within them, has Buddha nature. And to really believe that, to know that, it has prevented, I think, a lot of burnout for me. You know, because I'm not necessarily trying to fix people, right? I can,
right.
Maybe I can try and illuminate and show like the light within you, right? But
Yeah.
also, if it's, you know, that's not the time, it's not the time. And
That's
I,
right.
you know,
But
I
you're
just
just
want
gonna
to
let
let
your
go.
light shine. You're just gonna keep on
Right.
shining,
Right.
right?
And that
Like, and
we
it
can
doesn't,
do that with people.
it's not necessarily gonna diminish even, maybe from the perspective of someone else, right? But you're gonna just keep on growing with that light, keep on
Yeah.
radiating.
Yeah, absolutely. And we never know like how even just the smallest act of compassion can really benefit people. You know, I heard from someone recently who I worked with for a while, and usually I never hear from people. You know, they just kind of like go off and it's like, I hope they're okay.
Yeah.
But I heard from this person and it was really great. They said something that was meaningful for them that I totally forgot, you know, we had even talked about, right? And so it's like, you know, that is such a like a balm for this burnout, right? Is that like we actually never know how we're influencing someone in the moment. So like trust that we're like every single, you know, positive like interaction we have with someone, or it just trying to bring in some dharma into
That's right.
an interaction, that is doing good. It just is, like, to have faith in that. It
Yeah,
is
well, it's
doing good.
clear, right? Like all of our
Yeah.
actions have a ripple effect, whether we're aware of it or whether we see it, we see the effect or not. Like there cannot be an action without some type of equal and opposite reaction, right? There's this sort of this radiant quality to it.
Right.
So if we're aiming towards doing it, you know, being benevolent and helpful, kind, considerate, compassionate, then what we radiate outward will be the best that we can hope for.
Absolutely. Oh, I love it, Daniel. Thank you so much for this
Thank you.
conversation.
I'm
Yeah.
glad you brought it up, Jack. You gave me a lot to think about.
Oh, so glad. Yes. Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me ramble about my job.
Good stuff. Yeah, I appreciate it. And then we're not going to be together next week, right?
Next week, nope. I will be flying back to Seattle from Los Angeles. So next time will be January 2nd.
All right.
Amazing.
We'll see each other in the new year. In the meantime, I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
I really hope the same for you too, Daniel. I hope it is joyful and merry, just like packed to the brim.
Maybe so. All right. Take care, my friend. Be well.
You
Bye,
too.
everybody.
Bye.